Good afternoon. Does anybody know Iraq?
Genesis 2.
Oh, okay. Well, Genesis good. So, at least someone's paying attention. We're gonna actually begin with 17, but I want to backlash. Boy, that's see, I just worked on the gear. My mind was backlash. What's the gear? Got to check the backlash of gears. Excuse me. Remember, I said that chapter 2 has several subject matters within it, right? And so we went through about the Sabbath, what was called the cease. Remember the word went through the word cease? Okay. So it's kind of a good word to remember. And the next subject matter was this thing called a garden. Now, if you remember last week I said this, or 2 weeks ago, what does the word garden mean in Hebrew? It's a hedge, okay? It's the fence that's around something. It's not where you plant things. It's that which goes around something. What was it around?
The
place called Eden. Okay? That's what Hebrew is saying. There was a fence or a hedge around Eden. It's not that there was a garden to plant food or trees in the place called Eden. Because that's our English words, see? But Hebrew, that's not what it says. It says there's a big, huge hedge, which is translated as garden here. It should be translated as fence or a hedge. There was a hedge. And inside that hedge was Eden.
What
right?
does Eden mean?
Can anybody remember what Eden mean?
Desert.
No, not technically speaking. It means that which is pleasant and pleasing and to the point where you're excited about it. I mean, it's your world. It's great pleasure, the technical Hebrew word, where it comes from. Okay? What Daniel was referring to is that because at the very beginning of this thing, there was no water, there was no plants, there was no nothing, right? So basically it was an arid land until he started making and forming the man out of the clay. All right? And then we had these rivers. Now, I know some of you weren't here. And very fascinating to start looking at why all of a sudden rivers are mentioned here in the second chapter. Right? So it's kind of less subject matter. It's kind of different than anything else. And then we're into where we're at now. We're in an area. We had finished about the knowledge of good and the knowledge of evil. Right? We had a pretty good discussion, I think, about that, what that meant. We will go in more greater detail about that one when we reach into the third chapter of Genesis. There's certain key words that I would have mentioned in the first chapter because it leads to this location. But because it was getting a little bit boring, I'll backtrack. And we'll go through certain statements that are said in the first chapter that will help us to understand a little bit more about Vayomer Elohim. What is Vayomer Elohim? And said God, or Elohim. So it's very important that we pay attention to what he says. Why? Because he's our creator. Good advice. Most and greatest advice you ever get is from him. Okay. All right. So we're going to work on a little bit here. Genesis chapter 2 and verse 17. That's where we're going to begin. I'm not going to go through the word knowledge. But does anybody remember what a Hebrew word is and what does it mean? Da. Da-ta or da-tat.
Knowledge.
What's the basic cunning, clever?
Oh, that's right.
Okay. The ability to discern. All right. So keep that part in mind. It's very, very important. And we went through areas where that God said, I want you to what? Have knowledge. I want you to be cunning. I want you to discern. I want you to pay attention. Yes.
And you had also pointed out that neither one of those, when we hear cunning or something like that, it's usually a negative.
It's a negative verb.
These are neither negative or positive.
It's a negative or positive. Because everything is tov good. Right. Keep tov, right? what God did was keep tov, including the knowledge of tree and evil, it, by the way, is keep tov. Keep that in mind. Keep tov. Right? God didn't make a mistake He didn't make an error by planting something as a symbolism of knowledge. Remember, this knowledge consists of two things. One is Tov, and the other one is
Ra.
What's that mean? Well, it means to spoil, take something, a delivery, tear it apart, make something that was good, and deliberately pollute it. This is what knowledge, that's what evil basically refers to. And we think about this, he said, okay, Adam and Eve, now they have come to know something. They've come to know what I now know. They know they can take something that is good and pollute it. Destroy it, crumble it, tear it apart, destroy it. Okay? We won't get there because in chapter 3, but we're not there yet. I want to get this statement, though. He says, at the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, thou shalt not eat of it, for in the day thou shalt eat of it, thou shalt surely die. Now, it's a very fascinating phrase in Hebrew. What does that mean in Hebrew? You spelled it out last week. Remember what he said?
In dying, you will die.
In dying, you shall die. Okay, the Hebrew phrase, mota, tamota. All right. Mota, tamota. In our English, it just says, in dying, you doesn't say in dying you will die. It just says, if you eat it, you'll die. That's not what it says. It says, you will, so we'll see it again here in just a little while, that in death, when you die, you will die. It's kind of like a great play on words, right? You remember what Yahshua said to the Sadducees? And he said, you think that God is God of the dead? Or is God the God of the living? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. All right? They're living. Now, they're still dead, but in the world of eyes and mind and spirit, how God deals with them, they are not dead. They are living. Not yet in where he is at, but he doesn't consider them dead. And we know that in the New Testament, quite often about falling asleep. It doesn't mean they're dead. In dying, they didn't die. In dying, they're still in the grave, but they have life. It bases a plan word. So basically, we're seeing here, and this is repeated later on. I only found this place twice, this word listed twice this direction. And so far, all that I've done my research on this thing, but in dying, you should surely die. And that basically is a phrase that's being said. And so, go to Genesis chapter 3, verse 3. I'm going ahead just a little bit. I'm not going to explain an awful lot about that yet. Okay? Talk about the fruit of the tree, which is in the midst of the garden, midst of the hedge, all right, center of the hedge. God hath said, ye shall not eat of it, neither shall ye touch it, lest ye die. And the serpent said unto the woman, ye shall not surely, what? Mote, tabote. He knew what was playing games on. He says, no, wait a minute, in dying you will not die. That's what he said, right? So, but see, it's a contradiction to what the Lord said, right? In dying, you shall surely die. Now, she knew not to eat of the fruit. We'll get to chapter 3, we'll get to chapter 3. Just listen to the words for a minute. So the devil turned around, or the serpent turned around, and he used the same exact phrase that was told to Adam in the beginning. In the very first chapter, or verse, in the second chapter. So now we have a play on words. So there is a difference between those two words. Now, let me ask you a question. When God created Adam out of the dirt, earth, was Adam to never grow?
Grow? What do you mean? Grow like physically or?
Yeah, physically.
Yeah, he's done.
Was he supposed to be then? And that's it? He is there? If he, let's say if he created at the age of 20, was he always going to be 20 at the, you know, no matter what happened, always look that way? Or what was going to happen to him?
He would have aged.
He would have aged. You know why? Because this earth is set in a time cycle. Creator put it in a time cycle. Everything he has created that's on this earth is in a time cycle. It's the, quote, the Moedim. Okay, so everything is set in precise moment and time as God has done it and planned it in his plan. We have to sometimes think, and I never heard an awful lot of people say, well, if Adam and Eve never sinned, they would never have died. Well, that's not what it says. It says, in dying, you shall surely die if you partake of that tree. We know that Abraham is in the living. We know that Moses is in the living. We know that King David is in the living. And we know what the book of Habakkuk says about King David. He has not risen. He is still in his sepulcher. He is still buried today in the earth. He has not risen. He's still there. Do we look at David and say, Dave, you lost out? No, he didn't move up, lose out at all. Because he's amongst the living. Mm-hmm. All right, so we've got to keep that apart in our mind and how that works. Genesis chapter 2, verse 18. I'm going to go through this pretty quick because I don't have as much time as I normally do. But I just want you to look at this words. I love looking at words. You know that. Yes. Chapter 2 again. Verse 18 now. I tear apart words. And I've done it all my life. It's just one of those habits I got, or what do I call it? A hobby, I guess you might call it. And I tear apart words, find out where they came from, what they mean, what the purpose behind it. And going through the Hebrew, it's more challenging in a lot of ways because I have to set my mind above rather than my mind on this earth. I look above and say, what is it that God has in mind? Because everything physical on this earth pictures and tells us the spiritual world. All right? God didn't make a mistake. When he created man. Because he said, when he rested, what did he say?
He told you.
Everything I've done and I worked and I created, guess what? It's keto. Not a flaw in it. All right? So we know that God didn't make a mistake when he made the earth. In fact, we know by Scripture, Book of Revelations, guess where he wants to live?
On the earth.
On the earth. Of course, having a new earth. Don't think about being reshaped in the sense of this was completely gone and that's it. No, he's going to reshape this earth. That's what the first chapter of Genesis is all about and how he's going to do it. And he's going to do it in what we call 6,000 years. And it takes a seventh year to clean it up, put it into ceasing. All right. So let's look at the very first word. Well, not the very first word, I'm saying. The first statement is what? You should all know that. Vayomer Elohim. Vayomer. Doesn't say Vayomer Elohim. What does it say?
Yahuwah.
Okay, Vayomer Elohim Yahuwah. Or Vayomer Yahuwah Elohim. We went through this last week. I told you where that came from. We have identification. There's a lot of Elohim out there. Well, this one's got a certain title. You got to pay attention to that title, because that title is very vital. No one else has got that title. He's the only one who's got that title. But it is not good that man should be alone. Oh.
God created him. Where on the, let's say, and what happened here?
Oh, he forgot somebody. He says, oops. Did God make a mistake? No, he didn't make a mistake. We have to take a look at this word and find out what that means to be alone. Now, that's an interesting phrase. When we think alone, because see the world's and people all around about us, there's so many people, and we find ourselves alone, we are referring to a statement. We are alone, and nobody is with me. You can be in a crowded room with millions of people, and you could be alone, right? That's how we interpret the word alone, right? Now, Adam wasn't in a world. There are millions of people. And it wasn't Adam that said, "Hey, I'm alone." He had no idea what that meant. All right? It is God who said, "Oh, guess what?" And the word is to be alone or to become alone. It comes from a verb to be divided or to be alone. Not doesn't mean that he was lonely. Doesn't mean that he was sad. Doesn't mean that he missed his mom and his dad. He wasn't homesick. That wasn't there, right? So here, the word alone comes about. It calls to be separate from or being by yourself. And therefore, he says, "I'm going to do something. I'm going to do a," what's that word? Help mate. Well, first we have to look at the word help. If we kind of look at the word help, we have a little bit of better understanding. It's a real simple word. It means to surround. It means to protect. Or to give aid. You see all three little words? Help means to be surrounded. Number two, it's to be protected. You know, when you have to have protection, you have to have help, have protection, right? And the other one is just plain being an aid or assistance, someone that helps you in doing your function. The next word is interesting, and it's help. In your old English is meet or help mate. Let's help meet. What does that word mean? Well, I'm going to have to backtrack just a little bit so we have two separate words that you'll have a better understanding about, I hope. It was in chapter 2. Way up here. Where are my notes at here now? Hold on. Just saw it. Just had it here. Just a minute. Excuse me a minute. Oh, here it is. We went through this last time. Genesis 2, chapter 5. Chapter 2, verse 5. And it says there, "And every plant of the field before it was on the earth." I told you what the word before meant, correct? Now we're going to find out another Hebrew word that's been translated sometimes in a misunderstood. But many times it means the same thing as what we would think of before, but different kind of word of before. Okay? This word in Hebrew, in chapter 5, verse 5, rather, is something that has not yet happened. And this other one, it says something entirely different. And it has to mean, or does mean, and we'll find it in a couple of places here in this written here, and it says, front. Oh, I need help. Front. What? What does that mean? What does front mean? Okay, what was it?
Came before.
Before. Something is now in front of him or before him. Now we have a different meaning of the word before, don't we? We use that in English, don't we? There's something he was going to be faced. And guess what was put in front of Adam? What was put before him? The woman was put before him. So he says, "I'm going to put something before him, in front of him. It's going to be facing him face to face." A lot of people have, in the past, I have heard, that the woman is to be on his side because he came from his side. Therefore, she should be on his side. Well, that sounds cool. I can accept that to a degree. But I like this Hebrew word that says, right in front of you, right in your face there. And that's what you've got to put before him. In front of him, not before him. In the sense of, it didn't happen yet. He says it means to be a counterpart, or it can mean a front or stand in front of, the opposite of. Now we know that women are opposite of men, don't we?
Oh, really?
I'll guarantee you. Men don't think like women, and women don't think like men. They're totally a different world. And they actually are, and by the way, not a mistake by the Creator. He didn't make a mistake saying, oh, I should have given the woman the same brain that man had. Or I should have given the man the same brain that the woman had. No. He is the one that divided it. He is the one that separated it. And when he separated something out of the man, he separated more than just bone and flesh. Right? Took a whole lot more out of him. He was in a deep sleep. And Adam said, she is now, what? Bone of my bone? And flesh of my flesh.
The word said,
whoa. God didn't make a mistake when he did that. He just said, okay, now, Adam, this is what I'm going to put before you. Now let's go to Genesis 31:32. We don't have to go there. I'll just read it. With whomever thou findest thy God, let him not live before your brethren. Okay, don't let him before you. Don't let him be a part of or join with or in front of your brethren. Get rid of him. It's not the one that came before them. It's the one that is in front of them that's worshiping or doing something that is contrary to worshiping the true God. Don't let that one be in front of you. Not the same word, by the way, in Hebrew, for the word thou shalt not have any other God before you. It's a different word there in that case. We're not there. But you understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So now he gets rid of it. Now there's another place very fascinating. He said now, verse 37, same chapter of 31. Wherefore thou hast searched all my stuff, thou hast found of all of thy household stuff, set there before my brethren and my brethren and thy brethren, that they may judge between you. Now place it in front of them so they can see. You understand what I'm saying about before? So when God made Adam and Eve, and he said, I help mate. Well, it's kind of a bad word, a lot of word, or help meet. He says, I'm going to make something, or I'm going to give him help. His aid is going to be right in front of him. You know, man needs to see what's in front of him most of the time. Most men are one-track minds. You know, the whole saying is, there's two sayings. One is you put a man into a submarine, he goes through one door, down behind him, he doesn't remember that one, but he remembers where he's at right now. He knows where he's at, and he goes, and where he's supposed to go assigned, he goes there. All other things don't belong to him, it's not his job. So he doesn't even think about any other position of the ship. Just his function, his role. And when women play baseball, they can't play baseball with a man. You know why? No, listen. Why? Because when they play, their mind is on every base, all the fields, everywhere, all the players are at. Now I say, well, a wildy baseball. Now women can do that to women, then no problem, because women understand that point. Why did God do that for women?
For kids.
I mean, that's a blessing. I mean, a woman can really tell where her kids are at almost any moment, any time. And what they say, you know, they can do two things at the same time. Well, technically speaking, they can't, physically. But in a sense, they really pay attention. They know what's going on. And, you know, that was talking about Daniel. You know, he's going to have a wish one, bold lion. You know, I bet Lorianne could pick it out quicker than he could. Because Daniel's a man, one track. Oh, and she says, wait a minute. She knew this, and that, because she's around him. Okay? So God didn't make a mistake when he separated them.
That's multitasking.
And that's a beautiful thing about the Creator, in creating this thing, or this being, for the man. He needed to do a lot of work. Back in Genesis chapter 2, verse 8, 19. And out of the womb, out of the ground, God formed every beast of the field and every fowl of the air and brought them to Adam to see what he would call them. And so on and so forth. Verse 20. And Adam gave names to all cattle, all fowl, every beast. All right. What is the Hebrew word for cattle?
Behemoth.
Yeah. What does it mean?
It means a huge creature.
The root word, or the verb for this word, basically means, and you'll understand this here, not too hard, mute, dumb.
A huge dumb creature.
All right, now see, wait, when you eat, you go out there and you have this cow. Is that cow smart? Or is a cow kind of dumb?
Genius.
God created it that way. Why? Did he make a mistake?
No, it was a miracle.
It's a clean animal, basically speaking. We won't get into cows at this particular point in time, but sheep?
Dumb.
Fish with scales? They're dumb. A shark is not dumb.
He knows how to survive.
A snake is not dumb. A lion's not dumb. Dog is not dumb. Cat's not dumb. Sometimes they can outsmart you, almost. I'm sorry, what?
Pigs are not dumb.
Pigs are smart.
That's right.
Yeah.
There may be some unclean animals that are dumb, I don't know, but I'm not an expert on that. But I wanted to carry a clarification. It's interesting with the word cattle. It's been mistranslated an awful lot in your Bible, and some might be useful if you look at that word cattle. Really find out, it really doesn't mean cattle in some cases. It really means the other word, which is called beast. Oh, what's a beast?
Beast.
Where did the word come from? Susan?
Beast?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay, we say, huh? I lift my wine and glass up every Shabbat. What do I say? L'chaim when I'm drunk. I'm drinking it. Okay, so we have this word beast. This really comes from the word life. That which is living. That which has substance within it, other than just being dumb or mute, unable to communicate. It's very fascinating to know the difference between the two, but it's very fascinating to also know one more thing. It says in the field. The word field here is a Hebrew word meaning wide open space. Wide open space. Your cattle and sheep are confined to a location. Who confines them to a location? Man does. Man confines them to a location. Man cannot confine to what's called life or living or what's called beast. It's a problem. The beast is a really good word to use. I mean, it's the best way for English we could come up with. All right. I want to talk about one more thing. That's the word fowl. Old English says the word fowl. Interesting word. What does it mean? The verb is oof, which means cover.
Cover?
Cover. And it's what I didn't get a chance to talk about that in Genesis chapter 1 because I had to rush along on that one. But what does a bird do?
Fly.
Wings are out there, and it's covering. What did the Messiah say when he said what he said to Jerusalem?
If I could only take you in as a mother hen or a chick.
Yeah, cover you like a mother hen would cover. Now, a hen doesn't mean a chicken. It means any female bird that's going to cover and protect their young. And so this is where that word comes from. And yes, it does aloft. It does, when it comes down, it means to rise and to elevate upwardly. But just to understand the basic meaning of the thing, it means to protect and to hover over and protect the young. And that's what the bird or fowl is word about, is basically comes from, to cover. It's very fascinating, isn't it? And, you know, so when we are, there's a song we play sometimes, The Shadow of Your
Wings.
Shadow of Your Covering. The tallit is a representation of what? They're called wings out there. They cover. They hover over. Okay? That's why those words. He says, I carried you out on what?
Eagles.
Wait, was there eagles there? Was American Eagle? The mighty, huge, giant eagle. I'm going to tell you that much. But it didn't do a very good job because they had to walk. See, meaning it covered you with. A cover protected you with eagle's wings, his. I'll tell you why it's eagle wings. What does a book of Revelations describe one of the creatures? Like an eagle. All right, so when John saw this picture of an eagle, along with the one of the head of a bull and the head of a man and the head of a, what was the other one? I can't remember. This is a description of the actions and functions of what the Creator of heaven and earth does. So he shows a picture of an eagle. When John saw it, he knew what it meant. He wasn't seeing an eagle. He was seeing an eagle to cover, to protect. All right? And so all these words we use, and we see pictures. So every time you see an eagle soar, a real eagle soar or a hawk soar, yeah, just take a look up there. It's awesome. It was some years ago we were told, what's your favorite animal? And I always said mine was always the eagle. I always liked the soaring eagle. Fly way up high. Guess what eagle does? They got such keen eyes. They see everything. Guess what? The eternal creator of heaven and earth, he's like an eagle. He sees everything. He's really got good eyesight. In fact, he sees better than an eagle. He can see right through you. He can see what you're thinking of, what your brain is, what your mind does. But he doesn't destroy it. He protects it. Like the wings protect you from the creator he has protected. I wanted to expound on that because I thought it was one of the most fascinating things about the eagle. I'm going to get going here. I think, just a couple more things. I want to go to Genesis 2, chapter 21. And the Lord caused a deep sleep to fall upon Adam, and he slept, and he took ahad of his ribs and closed up the flesh as thereof. Now, some translations have it translated as a rib or ribs. Why would it be translated as ribs? It's a fascinating word. I've heard some people say, well, he took it from all somewhere place in his body. Well, he didn't take it from the rib. He took it because man still had his ribs there. One should be gone to prove there's a God. I never heard that statement before. All men should have one rib gone to prove that, you know, that God is God. It's a silly, you know, statement. The verb form means, it comes with the very same spelling, to curve. Curve.
The word.
The verb.
The word.
What do I got? Zadi. Zala? Zala. Zala. So Zadi, Lamed, Ayin, and a Tet.
So it's the curve.
To be curved. That's quite interesting to know. It's a curve. That's where it came from. And so this is the reason why you're 1611 English. I know some people don't like 1611 English. I love it. I studied it. But I want to express upon this in the third chapter when we get a chance to understand the difference why I use 1611, which doesn't do it very well at all in modern English. And we'll come up with that when the time comes. So now we have, it comes from mud, and it translated the very same word means side. So he didn't take it from his foot, didn't take it from his head, didn't take it from his arm, he took it from his side. And so we know, that's just to let you know, well, that word rib really means something that's curved. It comes from the verb to curve, that is, that which is curved. Yeah, it's kind of interesting to know. All right, I'm going to call it quits. Let's finish before I do, I want to go down to the last verse, chapter 2. Yes?
What was the word for bones?
I didn't look the word bones up. I didn't see the word bones, but I didn't pay attention to it, don't you? I'm sorry. I looked it up, and I thought, that'd be interesting. No, I'll ignore that one. I probably should have, not have. They're potty, pretty common words. It wasn't bone means strength or might or that which is steady. Basically, if I remember correctly, that's where the Hebrew word comes from. It's something that has got strength, it's steady, it's firm. So your bones are firm. It says holds the flesh together. Yes.
But it says et ha salah.
Yes.
Salah, I guess. So it's specific, the curve.
The curve.
It doesn't even look like it has the word bone so much as the curve.
In that verse, that is correct. She's talking about verse 23. Bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. Okay. That word there, bone, has to do with, I'm trying to remember what it is in Hebrew. I didn't write it down. But it has to do with being strength, or the structure, we would call it. And the flesh, which is the next word, is something that's attached to or clings to and is supported by that which is called the bone. This is kind of simple. Simple. Yeah. Verse 25, though, we'll not get into it today because it leads into the next chapter. But I want you to keep track of a couple of very interesting terminologies here. And they were both naked, the man and the woman, and were not ashamed. I'm going to accentuate on the naked, and I'm going to accentuate on the ashamed. And it has everything to do with the third chapter. It's not a mistake that it just ends there. And the next verse begins where it begins. Very well laid out thought pattern. All right, that's just to let you know. Next week is going to be chapter 3, part of it. I don't know if I get through the whole thing.
You're leaving us with a cliffhanger.
Yes, I had to leave you with a cliffhanger. I mean,
you're leaving us exposed.
Don't be ashamed.
Yes.
I wasn't ready for that one. Okay, break time. Yes.
Yeah, we were talking about the simple and the smarter of the animals, and this is something I learned from my granddaughter. Can you tell me the difference between a piano and a fish? You can tune a piano, but you can't tune a fish.